It is 7:30, and we're having a special Sunday morning edition of Community Forum, and we're very lucky to have with us live in the studios this morning Malik Rahim. Malik Rahim was raised in the New Orleans, Algiers neighborhood. He was a founding member of the Black Panthers Louisiana chapter. He has worked on numerous campaigns, including the anti-death penalty campaign Pilgrimage for Life, alongside Sister Helen Prejean and others, and on the successful National Coalition to Free the Angola 3. Malik is co-founder and operator of the Algiers Development Center and Invest Transitional Housing, an ex-offenders program which housed over 1,000 men, women, and children. He is co-founder and outreach organizer of Housing is a Human Right, an affordable housing nonprofit organization in San Francisco. And he is here and in town to talk about his latest work as co-founder of the Common Ground Collective, a community-wide response to government failures following the devastation of Hurricane Katrina. Malik, thank you very much for spending time with us this morning.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Let's start out, and if you could tell us about what is Common Ground and how did it come about?
Well, Common Ground is an organization that is made up of just individuals who have made a stand for peace and justice. Our emphasis has been upon restoring hope while at the same time teaching civic responsibility. We work under the premise of solidarity and not charity. It was founded by Scott Crow and I on September the 5th, 2005. We decided that it was time to start an organization to address our governmental failure to assist. No, I'm wrong, because in order to say a failure, that also implied that you had to try. So I would say our government total abandonment of the approximately 150,000 people that our government knew had no means of escaping out of harm's way of Hurricane Katrina. So behind that, the blatant racism of seeing individuals denied access to another segment or another community or another city or another county of Louisiana simply because of the color of their skin. We decided that it was time for us to act. And in doing so, we looked at and tried to analyze why past attempt at reviving a progressive movement have failed. And we kept coming up with the same conclusion, that we allow our petty differences to divide us from working together. A dear friend of mine and comrade, Robert King Wilkerson, who's the only freed member of the Angola 3, stated that what we need to do is find that common ground that unites us. And so there came the name. We said it was no need of looking for a name, because you just named us. I added collective because I'm a firm believer in a collective spirit. And Common Ground was founded. My former partner, Sharon Johnson, she put up $30. I put up $20. And the rest was history. You know, we formed Common Ground. Since that conception up from then until now, we have served almost 80,000 people, providing a multitude of services. We now operate 3 health clinics and we're in the process of opening two more. We have a legal clinic. We have an eviction defense network. We have our distribution centers. We have our bioremediation program, which we call Meg, our Meg Perry Project. And Meg was a volunteer from Maine who came down on a grease bus. And she was tragically killed in New Orleans, where the bus turned over and she was crushed under the bus. And she was an environmental scientist. And so we dedicated our gardening and our bioremediation program to her. And it's one of the most important programs that we have. And we also offer programs and to help residents train for how to clean up their homes. We have our mold remediation program and our house gutting program, where we actually go out and we gut out homes. As of today, we have probably gutted out more than 800 homes in six parishes. Now we have started our Common Ground Community Development Corporation, and we have just taken site control of a 350-unit apartment complex, in which we hope to take off the grid. We hope to make solar, biodiesel, the main source of electricity and a means of heating, you know, our water. We have developed a first response team that is probably second to none in the world. We're given the opportunity and the finance to go to any location that is in need of after a disaster within approximately 3 to 4 hours. We could be up and running and serving people. We have had over 8,000 volunteers to come down and to work with us. And again, we are operating now and serving residents in 9 parishes. And it's been a very remarkable feat, you know. And it has been just done by just regular people, which I classify as the essence of America. And they have came down and made the stand. We don't receive no government assistance. And to say that we have served over 60,000 in New Orleans, we have yet to be visited by one elected official. But we have continued, and we continue to persevere.
I've heard you describe the situation with Hurricane Katrina as a natural disaster, but a national tragedy.
Yes.
How long did you, I don't know if wait's the right word, but how much time passed before you initiated your solution, Common Ground?
Well, right before, because, you know, unlike an earthquake, you know, where you have no real warning. We had 3 days to prepare. My first attempt. I have been a community organizer in New Orleans for over 35 years. So the first thing I attempted to do is to organize a volunteer team to work with the city in preparation and first response. We was told that there was no need. They had everything under control. So we still continue to work on our own to do certain things that we knew that would have to happen. Because one thing, you cannot live in a hurricane-prone community without understanding the importance of preparation. And we realized that this hurricane was catching people at the most desperate time. The 150,000 people that was literally abandoned was your poor and your elderly. In New Orleans, the average income of a poor person is less than $7,000 a year. And we knew that those that was being abandoned was basically the elderly and single women with children. So we started making preparations by first organizing or splitting the Algiers and certain segments of New Orleans into districts and establishing certain persons to operate in those districts that has came, met with us, and said that they was going to stay. So after that, we started making sure that certain some of the basics, food, candles, flashlights, life preservers, access to boats was available. So right after the hurricane, and we were spared from being hit by Katrina. So I want your audience to know that Katrina did not hit New Orleans. The only thing that hit New Orleans was our governmental neglect. As a spiritual person, I truly believe that it was the spirit of Emmett Till, who died 50 years to that date on the 28th of August, that turned that hurricane and spared us. Because if Katrina would have hit us the way it hit Mississippi, the loss of life in New Orleans would have been roughly around 50 to 100,000. But by the fact that we were spared, and basically after the hurricane had passed, I had done an assessment of the damage to my home. I went around to some of my family members and friends who had evacuated to see how their home has survived through this hurricane. I talked to my children to see, make sure that them and my grandchildren was okay. And to many of my friends who had worked with us during this time with our preparation. We was without electricity, but we all knew that that was going to be one of the first things to go. And I cleaned up my yard and was cutting my grass when we found out that that certain levees had been breached and that flooding was occurring on the east bank of New Orleans. I live on the west bank. We did not flood. The first 2 days after the hurricane, we assisted in rescue work. Most of the young, courageous young men who was doing the rescues wouldn't allow me to get in the water. They were steady telling me, "Hey, Pops, you just stay here on I-10. And as we bring them in, you know, then you could help them." And I saw such courageous deeds. I seen individuals take refrigerators, tear the door open off of them, and pull the motors out and use it as floating devices, taking tires off of cars and using them as floating devices. I seen individuals taking bodies and tying them to street poles, was doing, I mean, so many courageous things. And then I saw the worst. I saw white vigilantes that was allowed to roam the streets and barricade their neighborhoods and literally kill at will without any justification. I had a confrontation with them twice. After the second confrontation with them is when I made a call for assistance. And that's when Scott Crow and Brandon Darby came down and literally stood guard on my front porch to protect us. These are two individuals that if I would live to be 100, I would never forget. And many times I would sit on and ask them why. You know, why did y'all come down here? Why did y'all risk your safety to protect me? And each time I would ask that, I would get the same response. You know, because this is the right thing to do. But they was able to come through because they was white. And it was, I would say one of the, it had such an impact upon me that these two young white men would risk their lives to protect an old black man. And it did so much. When we seen that the city of Gretna in Jefferson Parish would not allow African Americans to enter into that parish, not because they was committing any crimes, but simply because they was black. When we watched them build bunkers to make sure that blacks could not go into their parish, but at the same time was opening up their doors to whites. And the only whites that they turned around was whites that refused to go in unless the African-American who was with them was allowed in. And seeing what they was called nigger lovers and turned around. We had two staff reporters from Amy Goodman's program, Democracy Now!, to come in and tell us that Jefferson Parish police told him that he wished every nigger in a night war would drown. Without any distinction between men, women, the young and the old, he said he wished everyone would drown. And to see those that they was turning around, I could have halfway understood them turning around men. But they was turning around single women with children, and they wouldn't even allow the babies to find refuge in that parish. They could use the justification of stopping looters, but can a baby steal? Children 4 or 5 years old, some of them still in their mother's arms, being turned around and forced to go back into a city that was devastated. We witnessed this, and the government refused to do anything. So it was under these conditions that we formed Common Ground. It was under these conditions we went from doing rescue to relief work. And we persevered through this. We've seen individuals, because as I speak to you now, I can say that most of the men who died during Katrina, they did not drown. They died of gunshot wounds. We heard of this group of young men that was on I-10 that was literally slaughtered by the police. We've seen many bodies in Algiers that wasn't flooded, just lay in the sun for up to 2 weeks before they even thought about picking them up. And they only picked them up after Amy Goodman televised broadcast was made of why they allowed these bodies to lay in the streets. And all of a sudden, the very next day after the broadcast, they start picking up bodies. We saw a military and a demonization. First of all, the demonization of African American. Oh, that they was all looters. That they was raping women and killing babies in the Superdome. And we sit up and we say, well, the day before Katrina hit, people stood in line for up to 5 hours to get into the Superdome because they had to be searched for three things: drugs, alcohol, and weapons. So how was these armed thugs now in the Superdome when they were searched? New Orleans police is world renowned for crowd control, because every year during the Mardi Gras season, they're able to control over 2 million drunken partiers. So now we have just about 35,000 in the Superdome that are fleeing for their lives, trying to find safety. And they can't control 35,000 with them, the Louisiana and the Ohio National Guard. Then we hear about them shooting at helicopters. And I said, now who gonna shoot at who's trying to do the rescues? We see an individual shooting in the air to allow helicopters to know where they are, because people was trapped in their houses. In the lower night ward, people had 10 seconds before their homes was inundated. 10 seconds. And most of them had to find safety by busting through their ceilings and living in their attics. And those whose attics was flooded had to live on top of the roofs. And you imagine being in an attic in 95 to 100 degree temperature with 100% humidity. And the only thing you could do is just puncture a hole. And that's how we lost many of our elderly that could not climb in the attic. Seeing families who one member would fall off the roof and other family members would dive into the water to try to save them, and they all would perish. All these conditions is when we decided that it's time that we form a mechanism to not only to assist those who was victims of not the natural disaster, but the human tragedy that we was witnessing. And that's when I committed myself to be a voice to make sure that those who died, their death wouldn't be in vain, that we can learn from this to make sure that this never happened again. Yes, this was in the Deep South. Yes, this was in a city that had been governed or ruled by plantation syndicates since its conception. But this is also America. And it shouldn't be two Americas. One for the white, the rich and the privileged, and another for the poor, the disenfranchised, and the minorities. It shouldn't be. And that's what we saw, that was we witnessed, and that's what we organized against. Our call went out for those who stood for peace and justice. And then the essence of America responded. From the time I did an article with the Bayview newspaper, which was the first media entity to call and say, well, hey, what's really going on in New Orleans? That we start dispelling some of these lies that our mainstream media was projecting. And when that happened, the call was made, some of the most beautiful people I believe to exist on this planet answered that call. Many from right here in Seattle came down. It was a group from Seattle that came down and started our communications system. And within 2 days, we had a communication system that was better and far superior to any to exist within the state of Louisiana. And it was comprised just by young individuals. Some may call them geeks, some may call them techs. You know, I just call them little geniuses that came down and established an internet mesh system that allowed individuals to make not only phone calls, but the ability to get on that internet and to allow others to know exactly what's going on. We seen medics, street medics, that was right here in Seattle for the WTO, come down to New Orleans and go house to house on bicycles, asking if there was anyone that was in need of medical assistance. These was young white people that was coming into an African-American community in the Deep South. Never in the history of Louisiana have such deeds ever been done. So they wasn't only offering assistance. They was breaking down those walls of separation. They was showing blacks that all whites wasn't evil. And they was learning that all blacks wasn't drug addicts and criminals. That many of them was just decent, hard-working individuals. So we was breaking the stereotypes, those myths. And we done the same thing in Houma, working with the Native American community and your Cajuns. We did the same thing in New Orleans East, working with the Vietnamese community. We've done the same thing in Gretna, offering medical assistance to the white community. So we have shown over the past 10 months that there are, in this country, individuals that are truly is committed to bringing peace and justice. Our environmental program is touching what I believe is the greatest threat to human existence. Because regardless of if we was a nation, one nation, if we cannot breathe the air or drink the water, we still doomed. And in our haste to remove the flood water from out of New Orleans, we unleashed some of the most toxic flood water to exist in any major city in America. You could ride down the streets of New Orleans and see well over 150,000 homes that have written on them TFW, toxic flood water. But no one was questioning, as we was pumping this flood water out of the city, why wasn't we treating it? And where was we pumping it to? We was pumping it right back into one of the most fragile, some of the most beautiful environments to exist in America, in our wetlands, our bayous, our lakes, and our streams. And no one cared what was going to be the lasting ramification of what we was doing. But we start seeing young people coming down that was developing and brewing bacteria, the tea, that would clean up the environment. We start seeing individuals planting sunflower seeds, and mustard seeds, to grow mustard greens and sunflowers that would pull all the heavy metal out of the soil, and that was literally making areas cleaner than it was during pre-Katrina. If we had government assistance, we would have cleaned up all of New Orleans.
We are talking with Malik Rahim, co-founder of Common Ground Collective in New Orleans. I think one might get the impression from corporate media that things might have gotten better down in New Orleans, that things are on their way to recovery. So what is the truth about what is currently happening?
Yes, I mean, when you're flat on your back, just to look up is an improvement. So New Orleans is, right now, it's two New Orleans. Just like I said, it was two Americas. You have white New Orleans that is recovered, and you have black New Orleans. That's, if you would go there, it would be like the hurricane hit yesterday. One of the highest home ownership in America of any black community is the Night Ward. There, no one was given tarps to put on their roofs or any form of government aid. And right now, 10 months after Katrina, you still have segments without street lights, left on electricity for their homes. You still have individuals living in mold-infested homes. You still have almost 10,000 trailers that are vacant, because individuals are saying, yeah, we want the trailers, but not in our neighborhood. We had an elected official that said only over her dead body would she allow trailer parks to be in her community. That she wasn't going to make no haven for crack dealers and crack whores. Just so happy that she lost her re-election, I mean her bid for council person at large. But we have through this as a community, we have persevered through the efforts of Brandon Darby. The night ward was reopened. And this young white man single-handedly, and I won't say single-handedly, but him and Justin Knight literally opened this segment of the city that not only our city officials, but our national security agency had deemed that no one should live there. Brandon had while trying to open up this community, was bit twice by spiders, once on the neck and once on his leg, had gaping wounds. But he stayed. We have what we call the Lil Blue House in the Lower Night Ward that he did literally, that was at ground zero, that he literally opened up to show the community that if you come back, we will be here to assist you. These are just a few of the remarkable deeds that I see being done on a daily basis that is restoring hope and helping with the recovery. No one will go back without hope. New Orleans was a city that was a failure. It was a city that was built upon lies and half-truths. New Orleans had been in the grip of a drug war for 6 years prior to Katrina, under a HUD reconstruction program called Hope 6. Maybe close to 700 people have been murdered under this drug war that was perpetuated by our greed to destroy public housing. Right now, this drug war have reemerged in New Orleans because New Orleans was a city that did not offer opportunities to ex-offenders. We had a failed school system that was bankrupt. A school system that allowed a janitor to make more money than a principal, simply because the janitor's son was our superintendent. We had individuals that had been deceased for years that were still receiving compensation from our school system. We had a school system that almost 95% of the vendors did not even live in New Orleans. Children did not attend the schools, so they didn't care about honoring their contracts, only about making money. We had a levy board that was one of the most corrupt levy boards that ever exist. We didn't have one levy board. We had multitudes of levy boards. We had individuals that was making less than $35,000 to $40,000 a year, governing billions. Corruption was rampant, so rampant that we took it as a joke, the corruption. We took the honor in being a banana republic all the way up until Katrina. But now, in the aftermath of this, we're starting to rethink it. Now, corruption is no longer funny. We are no longer taking a blind eye to the racism. We are monitoring to make sure that the greed is exposed. At one time, if you see in New Orleans, you're seeing a sea of blue tarps on top of the roofs of homes throughout New Orleans. A contractor called Shaw Construction had that contract to put those blue tarps on these roofs. The government was paying Shaw Construction $175 a square foot to put those blue tarps on top of homes. $175 a square foot. That's more than it would cost to replace the roof with a complete new one. Just to put a blue tarp up. Shaw Construction was paying a subcontractor who was actually doing the work $2 a square foot. So somewhere in between what the actual subcontractor was receiving was a $173 land windfall. These are the things that we exposed, and for this we was deemed troublemakers, outside agitators that was bent upon stopping or impeding the progress. But the people in New Orleans didn't buy it, and that contract was taken away from them. New Orleans will be rebuilt, but hopefully with the assistance of those people like yourself and your listeners, a new New Orleans will emerge, a progressive New Orleans, one that's going to take advantage of the opportunities that now exist. Right now, New Orleans is the only city in New Orleans with zero unemployment. Where we tried to, in 2002, we tried to raise the minimum wage from $5.15 to $6.15 through a referendum that overwhelmingly passed, never to be enacted because it was caught up in litigation. Now Katrina have lifted that minimum wage to $8.50 with a bonus. We have a golden opportunity to take that lemon and turn it into some sweet lemonade. We have an opportunity to rebuild a city that will not be fossil fuel dependent. We can look at solar energy. We can look at biodiesel. We can look at other alternatives that we can use. We can rethink the building of a city. No place in America have been given this type of opportunity. But when you look at just that word, Katrina, it's a Russian word. The root meaning of that word is a purification or a cleansing. So we can make it a cleansing. We can make it a city, one that can reflect to the world, not just to America, but to the world, what we can do when a progressive community of America, those who truly stand for peace and justice, is at the forefront of the rebuilding. And we have that opportunity. I'm on this tour calling for all progressive contractors, all progressive journeymen in the construction trade, to come down and help us to make sure that not just the disaster predators is taking advantage of these opportunities. That we can talk about not just trying once again to control nature, but we can rethink our ways in dealing with nature, so that we can learn to live with nature. That we could start talking about not just building levees, but a storm protection system that is based upon the restoration of our wetlands. If we had spent $14 billion on restoring our wetlands, Katrina would not have had nowhere near the impact that it had upon New Orleans. When our levee systems was built, we had almost 120 or 130 miles of wetlands. I believe now we are down to about 40. And if we fail to act by 2050, there will not be any wetlands. The Gulf will be right at the doors of New Orleans. And I would hate to live in a city with a 50 feet high levee system. It reminds me of individuals that just put iron bars around their homes with no way of opening and closing them. And it protects you from burglars, but it makes you a prisoner within your home. We have the technology. At one time, we had a canal system within New Orleans that was second to none in the world. And we can build a storm protection system now that would be second to none in the world. We have the technology and we have the resources. At one time, the petroleum industry was one of the major cause of the destruction of our wetlands. But now they're even starting to see, not because of they finally care about human existence, but they understand the importance of profit. That without the wetlands, the ability to pump the petroleum out of the ground and through these pipelines won't exist. So now, regardless of what the reason, we have developed that common ground. Those who are working for the salvation of the wetlands and of the human race in an area that is deeply on the verge of extinction, and the business community. Because if we lose our wetlands, it would cause a depression in America. And why I could say that? Over up to 20, maybe a little higher percent, but I know at least 20% of the petroleum that we use in America come through those wetlands. At maybe a third of our nation's import and export goes through the Mississippi. How can you survive without it? But we have a chance of saving it. And if we could save it and restore it, and I know we can, if we could take and make Las Vegas the oasis that it is in the heart of a desert, I know we can save our wetlands. And if we could save our wetlands, then I know we could restore hope around the world. So we had a golden moment. I'm just hoping and praying that that people who truly understand the importance of environmental peace and justice will get involved, will come down, will help us to rebuild, will invest, if not donate, the resources that is needed to make sure that it's rebuilt. We are asking for environmental scientists, for doctors, for lawyers, for carpenters, for engineers. Come on down and help us. And if you cannot come down, then be that voice for those who have come down by holding your congressional leaders or representative accountable, making sure that they no longer suffer from this new disease called Katrina fatigue, that they get involved, that they monitor to make sure that every bit of funds that is allocated for the rebuilding of New Orleans is used in a just manner. You can get involved. You can make a difference. But you cannot make a difference if you refuse to act. And you cannot just say, well, I can't do nothing because I can't come to New Orleans. Because you can fight it right here. But if you would come down to New Orleans, you would have a total transformation. Because New Orleans offers an opportunity that you can train for to become first responders. At Common Ground, we are telling you that you can come to us and learn first responding techniques. Not by just a classroom setting, but on-the-job training that you will see firsthand what we can do. And you just think, if 10 people from every major city in America would come down to learn those first response techniques, and that 2 out of that 10 would make a commitment that if any type of disaster happened, that they would be right there to commit themselves for just 2 weeks. What we can do. Our government is now saying that FEMA is unprepared for this coming hurricane season, that we are unprepared for a pandemic crisis. But we can get prepared. We can get prepared on that grassroots level to make sure that this government will no longer be our salvation. And then maybe, just maybe, we can transform our government if they see that we have emerged from out of that drunken state of prosperity and truly is talking about saving this nation. And I'm going to tell you, if we save America, we have saved the world. But if we fail to act and destroy the environment of America, then we have just doomed this planet.
How can people find out more about your organization?
They can go to our website, commongroundrelief.org. They can call. Our number is area code 504-368-6897. That's area code 504-368-6897. They can come to some of the engagements that we have in the Seattle community. Oh, yes, and I just want to add to it that Shoreline and Evergreen College here have sent down many volunteers to work with us during spring break. We had 2,800 volunteers, and those 2,800 volunteers gutted out almost 300 houses, 2 schools, 5 faith-based institutions just in the month of March. That was really March Madness. You know, and during that time, we had a Food Not Bombs and the Rainbow Kitchen to come down, and especially the Rainbow Kitchen. They served 56,000 meals during that 1 month with an outdoor, homemade kitchen. So we know that there, you know, what can be done if when we stop just being nouns and become verbs. So we asking again for individuals to come down and become these verbs, the American verbs, the verbs of peace and justice. And I bet you that you would have the best time of your life, because you have found the opportunity of networking with people just like yourselves from all over the world. Because we have had volunteers from all over the world, from every state in this country, and from over 14 different nations, representing every continent. So please come on down. And if you cannot come down, assist us. We need generators. We need respirators. We need, hopefully, diesel generators, or solar generators. We need healthcare equipment and supplies. We need tents, dome tents, yurt tents. We need them. We need carpenters again. We need contractors, as willing to enter into joint ventures with individual contractors or progressive contractors that are already down, so that we can rebuild. But we, most of all, we need the light to continue to shine on what has truly happened in the Gulf Coast region. We are about to enter into a new hurricane season, where not only are they expecting the same amount of hurricane, but now that warning is not only just in the Gulf Coast, but also up the East Coast from Florida to Maine. And we know in between Florida and Maine sit one of the most populated areas in America, New York City. But then we also know that 70% of the American population right now live within a flood zone. 70% within 50 miles of a flood, of a coastline. So we need to be prepared. And this is a great opportunity to get prepared.
All right. Well, I want to thank you very much for coming in today.
And I thank you for allowing me this opportunity, because it's only through efforts and program like yourself that we are truly being able to get the word out. And I thank you.
We have just been talking with Malik Rahim. He is the co-founder of the Common Grounds Collective. And again, you can connect to his organization through their website at commongroundrelief.org.